This is Touchstone Publishers, your source for leadership skills and techniques.
Great day to you. Great day. And welcome to your Essential Leadership Skills Podcast. I'm Glenn Daniels. I'm here to let you know that we have an exceptional subject matter expert today because he's in the midst of the battle of a nonprofit company in the state of Texas. It's based in the state of Texas. They have several offices throughout the United States, but they're based in the state of Texas, and they are making a difference, not just a small difference, a generational difference. And this gentleman, Raphael Henry, we want to hear from him because he has embodied a lot of these leadership skills and techniques. Let's take a listen. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining the Essential Skills Podcast. Today, we have a special guest. His name is Raphael Henry. Now, this gentleman is with a nonprofit organization in the state of Texas that is making a generational change. The group of people he leads are responsible for making a change that's going to last many years past his time of being on this planet. So we want to talk to him about some of the essential skills and some warning signs and things like that so that all of you can take heed. Now, we're going to be very careful because, as you know, in the nonprofit world, a lot of your contracts require that you have a case of anonymity, that you don't get your name out there, you don't brag about yourself, you don't use things that are advertised, which something like this could be done. So we're not going to discuss the name of the company, but I'm going to tell you right now for a fact, because I have worked with this company. They're there to make a generational change and a heavy-duty change. So, Mr. Henry, welcome. I appreciate you taking the time to work with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I know a little bit about you because, like I said, I have, you know, full disclosure, I have worked with your company in a consultant role for about a year. And I wanted to, I know that you have your master's now. What else do you want to share about yourself that other leaders may need to hear or other future potential leaders may need to hear?
I think I would like to share with others that are seeking this position or either are currently in this position is that, you know, you should be compassionate about what you do. And when you're compassionate, people feed off of that and they have the same vision and mission that you have in serving others. So in any leadership role, you should never forget that you're there to lead and not direct anybody, because guidance can be given to anybody from whatever field of level of experience they're in, just providing them with their support and helping hand helps them understand that, yeah, you may be the leader, but you also have never forgotten where you come from.
Okay, excellent way to start off and put that. I want to ask you, though, because you're a little bit challenged there in your organization, because you have to not only create passion with your people, your team, your direct reports, but you're in a position where you have to create passion with those who are in the community, those who are not really involved. They've been disavowed from our community in some way. Mm-hmm. You're required to do that. Can you tell us a little bit about which one's easier to do, by the way, your people or the community?
Oh, it's, I would say starting off, it was more easier with my people that I work with, because getting them to understand and buy in on what my vision was for moving the program, it was kind of easier. But trying to get community partners to see your vision, to see the whole concept of what you're working with, was kind of a struggle, because they too have their own vision. And sometimes working with others that have other concepts of how things should go is a struggle. But now that they see the concept, the benefit of it, and how it helps them as well, there is more easy to get them to also sell the pitch of our program and have them spill out how it's been beneficial for the people that they also serve.
Okay, so it took a bit of time, but because you started off firstly getting your people who report directly to you, mm-hmm. if you'd excuse the expression, juiced up on the mission, it was easier for that to get out there.
It was. Okay. They were able to buy in on it because they too had the same vision, but it was during the transition of a new supervisor coming in, someone that was not as experienced, but had a vision that would take this program further and upward for better for the community.
Okay, that makes great sense. That makes great sense. There's an issue, especially in nonprofits, I think, because of the high turnover rate. where people are willing to leave because they feel like they get a dollar or so more, your turnover rate is a little bit lower than the national average, if, you know, from when I was there. A little bit lower from mm-hmm. national average. And that was, in my mind, created because of trust. Mm-hmm. Now, you may not be aware of this, but I noticed how your team trusts you. How'd you build that?
Mm-hmm. I would like to say I built that by letting them know that regardless of my status in the company, I had no problem with getting down and getting dirty with them at their level. If that meant I had to facilitate or do whatever was needed to help our participants, I was able to get in that role and take on the task as if I was just a normal worker.
Okay. So now what happens when you, well, have you ever been in a situation where you lost the trust?
I have been in a situation where my staff kind of felt that I let the ball go a little bit, but I was honest enough to tell them, you know, this is what caused this situation to happen. So being upfront with them got them to realize that it wasn't done to dishearten them or to not have trust, but some things are out of my control to where I just have to go with what's going on, but I have to also make sure that my staff is comfortable with that change as well.
Well, okay. So in other words, you made a mistake or something went wrong and mm-hmm. you had to fix that. Why is it so hard for upper management to admit that they're wrong?
I guess speaking from my experience and working with other prior management, the thing is when people are, when they do something wrong, they don't want their position to be questioned. And I believe that, you know, we're all human. I use a philosophy every day. If no one dies, it's fixable. So I believe that, you know, just admitting that, you know, you made a mistake, you're human. We all are human. We all are going to make mistakes. And just confessing that, hey, I made a mistake makes people feel more comfortable to trust you knowing that you too make mistakes.
Okay, that's good. So it's that ideal of sharing the good and the bad and building that trust to say, okay, hey, I made a mistake. But it also sounds like you're saying that sometimes it's the ego, if I can rephrase it and help me deconstruct it, it's the ego to say, well, I don't want to admit that I made a mistake.
Yeah, it's like it's the status with the position. You never show your staff that you made a mistake. But in order for any company to get to where they are, mistakes had to be made. And in order for them to learn from it, it needs to be broadcasted so that that issue never happens again.
Well, okay. Here's kind of the rub with a lot of industries, not just nonprofit, but every industry kind of. The leader sometimes doesn't see that they made a mistake and they don't. Why is that? I mean, wouldn't the demeanor of the employee tell you that you made a mistake with them or you're blowing trust? What do you see as a reason why we don't see that demeanor or a way to get a brain to notice that person's demeanor a little bit better?
I personally think the issue with that is it's a lack of concerning. We get so caught up in what our day-to-day routines are, which is expected. You still have a job that you have to do, but you have to remember that the people that are keeping that company going are under you. And you need to be key in on enough to say, hey, something is wrong. You're not doing what you normally would do on a day like this, or just being key in and being able to address that you see something different with them makes them feel more open and have that open dialogue with you to where if there's something going on, they're comfortable enough to come and tell you that.
Well, let me ask you if you don't mind, this is a surprise to you. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but let's say I'm your employee and you mm-hmm. see that my demeanor has changed. Maybe it's in the way of how I've been saying good morning. Maybe it's just changed a different way. Or maybe you can kind of notice that I'm detached from it mm-hmm. a little bit, or you notice that. Coaches, teach us all, how would you approach that with us? Because we have to be concerned about HR issues and not crossing that HR line. But tell us your specific game plan or statements that you would use to make sure that you're connected in that area.
Of course, addressing it. I mean, making it aware that you see that there's a difference. Open that dialogue for them to then explain to you what the issue may be, but also being so considerate to be able to take the criticism that may come because it may be directed to you. Being able to take that and build off of that makes your staff understand that you trust them enough to be able to say, yes, I was wrong. This is what we can do to address that, because if that person isn't happy at work, they're not going to be productive.
Do you feel like that's a key that a lot of leaders don't hear? I mean, I'm just asking because it seems like to me sometimes, especially when I get a new team that I'm working with, sometimes those folks are so well rigid into what the rules are that they don't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that is, we sometimes get so used to the norm that we forget to check in sometimes, because just checking in could help somebody get over whatever issue they're dealing with, even if it's not work related. It's just knowing that they have somebody they can say, hey, some things are going on. I need some support. And then it could also be with us being in a nonprofit arena, just giving them resources, letting them know, hey, this may be something you may want to consider. Not saying that there is an issue, but here's some resources available for you.
Okay, so by making sure that you're connecting and seeing what the demeanor is and seeing if there's a change, and then being aware of the resources there, that helps, because like we mentioned, there's still accountability. You still have numbers to reach. Your numbers mm-hmm. are state and government controlled. You have to have a certain amount of people enrolled, a certain amount of people going through the process every quarter, every year. And mm-hmm. there's certain things that has to happen that you are accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, how do you balance that accountability to say, here's the rules for this state, here's the rules for the federal government. You cannot get off of those.
Letting your staff know that. I mean, I don't think anybody that's working for a company should not know the guidelines and the bylaws. You're running a grant-funded program. You need to be able to say, okay, in order for us all to stay with and to be employed, we have to follow these guidelines. There are some things we can't steer away from. And letting your staff know up front, they know what the expectations are. So the accountability is set from the beginning.
So when you get to the point where you are laying out the expectations for your team and saying, we can't go away from this. Let me ask you, do you ever have that difficult conversation where someone is saying, and I'd like for you to give us your game plan when this happens. If I was coming up to you and say, hey, I can't work Thursday and Friday this week. I have to have it off because of family coming in town.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my game plan for that will be is, of course, letting them know their responsibility for the agency, because it's not just me that they're letting down. They're letting down the people that we also serve. And I understand emergency comes up, but I always tell my staff, if we can plan it better, we can probably alter some things, but some things just can't be altered. And your accountability is important to the agency.
Okay, I understand that. So you're letting that person know that they're accountable not only to you, but to the government and to your constituents there as well.
Correct.
Okay. However, here comes another line there. Sometimes people feel like they got to be just blunt. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel like that may not be such a good idea sometimes to just be brutally honest about things in the workplace?
For me, I like brutally honest. I don't like the sugarcoating part of things. Get it out. Let's talk about it. But in some instances, it's not acceptable because it's all about the delivery. And if the delivery has any type of demeanor that's going to be effective, you have to be mindful of that as well, because you still have to keep a job and you have to be professional at all times. You just have to be able to address your concerns in a professional manner to where you are still getting across what you want to say, but you're also addressing what needs to be addressed.
Okay. So do you have any game plan you can share with us? How do you soften that language? I guess I'm asking, how do you soften that language? You're going to tell me that I have to be to work Thursday and Friday. That's brutally honest. But how do you soften that language so I can see, okay.
Softening that language.
I know that's kind of an unfair question, but go ahead.
I believe communication, just talking about it, seeing, okay, I understand it's something important to you, but we also have responsibilities. And just letting them know, you know, I respect you being honest with me, but I also need you to understand that at this time, this is something that it has to be done, and there's nothing that I can do at this point. In the future, if you gave me prior notice or at least advance notice, we could try to work something out.
Okay. So I want to see if I can deconstruct that, because I think what you do naturally, and I don't think you – I want to see if you agree with how I deconstruct it. Let's put it that way. Okay. The first thing you said is you've listened to that person. You communicated that person. So I think first, you know I'm a big on the 7 habits of highly effective people. I think number 5, you have sought first to understand that person.
Mm-hmm.
You understand their needs. You understand everything they want. And then you get your point across.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would deconstruct that. I don't think you personally think about that, but that's exactly what you just said, I believe. You know, I listen to that person. I communicate with that person. I hear why they want to do it. Then I tell them why they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And by you understanding them, that takes the brutality out of it, or the brutality.
It does. And it changes the whole dynamic, because now they understand I got my point across. He heard what I needed to say. He gave me advice, and now it's my decision to make a choice. This what that would affect me or help the company.
Okay, so that comes to a manager being in touch with themselves, with their feelings, being in control with their ego, and being in touch with that employee, and not being in touch with that employee. Oftentimes, if a manager is in touch versus not being in touch, that creates a difference in how they're leading or misleading people.
Mm-hmm.
Leading or misleading information. How do you deal with that?
I think is, how can you trust what's being done if you're not involved? That's a big key to me. I always tell my staff, you know, if there's an issue going on, don't ever hesitate to discuss it with me, because if I don't address the issue or I'm not aware of the issue, I can't support you with the issue. So I believe that, you know, just being available, that's key. Don't send me off to do something and leave me hanging, because for some of our working with people, that can be sometimes demanding itself, to where you're carrying their issues and you just need to be able to just throw those issues off of you sometimes. So just being available and being in tune with what's going on.
Okay, let me ask you another question around that in a way, because in your nonprofit world, it's tough to retain employees. At least a lot mm-hmm. of people believe that. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, and when you look at why people leave the company, 80% of the people are leaving their positions because of the manager, mm-hmm. not because of the pay. Okay, but then you hear the opposite. Oh, they're getting $1 more someplace else, or 25 cents more someplace else.
But something caused them to start looking.
Yeah, exactly. So in the nonprofit world, why is it so tough to retain employees, and what is the best way to keep employees?
Well, I can honestly say I have not had an issue with that yet. So the only thing that I see an issue with that is like you stated, management not letting them feel a part of what's going on, because regardless if you're the janitor, you still want to be a part of what's going on, because you're making a change. You're making it easier for me to come in and not have to worry about cleaning something because you've taken care of that. It's just making people feel that they are valued regardless of what they are doing, regardless of what stature they're in that company. They still have a part that plays of that will that keeps the whole company going, because you can't do it all by yourself.
Okay, so let me deconstruct that a little bit, because I think that's an important part, and I bet a lot of leaders like yourself, that they picked up and they heard that, and they said, yeah, you know what you're saying? If I'm going to deconstruct a little bit, making everyone feel valued, making people feel valued. And when you make people feel valued, that makes a huge difference, and that's how you can retain people. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I've had the pleasure of working with people that were very excited about where they worked at. They weren't making a lot, but they were happy with what they were doing because somebody treated them with respect.
Okay, cool. That makes a lot of sense, and I think a lot of leaders are going to hear this. Change streams just a little bit on you.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the state that you're in, you have a lot of state laws. Mm-hmm. Also know because of the grant writing you're getting, the grants that you're winning, you have a lot of federal regulations that you have to walk through.
Mm-hmm.
A certain amount of people to a certain amount of people, time of operations and everything else involved, and all these different rules are in place for you.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, you have all these rules that are not only hamstringing you maybe, but they're also hamstringing your team. How do you create creativity in the marketplace? How do you allow your team to feel that they're creative so they can have control over their jobs to some degree?
The thing is bring whatever the guideline is, and let's see what we can do that's still within the guidelines, but it's something we also created, because now you've created it. This, you have something that you've put your hands and masterpiece at this situation to where it is within the guidelines, but it's comfortable for us, because some guidelines are so cookie cutter to where it fits for some, but not for everybody. So if you break it down, you understand it, and you, of course, you're not doing what is listed, you're just making it your own spin. And with allowing staff to have that opportunity and the ability to do that, they trust it, and they're not just trusted, but they also learn it.
Well, okay, so a follow-on question that you answered in that one. My follow-on question normally is, how do you create accountability? If you can give people creativity, how do you create accountability? And you've already kind of said that. You've kind of already said that by saying, okay, hold on. That noise keeps on popping up there. You kind of said that because you've already said that you create accountability by letting people know what the rules are and the expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very good. Okay. Tell us about your morning ritual. How do you get your day started?
Oh, my day is started. I try to do a morning prayer. So I'll get up. I, of course, try to get my mindset, because, you know, we wake up with some things on our minds, of course, from work, how we're going to get things going. But I try to get a good start with a prayer in, and trying to stay positive, and be able to provide my staff all of me, so that when they do have questions or concerns, I'm able to be able to bounce back. But one thing that I've always shared with my staff is, if I don't know, I will find out. And I've never tried to make them feel that I know everything, because I don't. And I'm experienced. I'm not an experienced leader. So I believe that just being honest and telling them, I don't know that. Let me find out, and I'll get it back to you.
Well, and that works in a lot of ways. And I just want to deconstruct that a little bit as well, because you don't know, and you're hiring people who know the job you're hiring them for. You know how to manage people, but you're not necessarily doing the job that they're doing. You're hiring people who know how to do the job, because your job is to manage the people. So you don't really know, and I'm glad that you got to get that ego out the way to say, hey, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell somebody, I don't know, and I'm not supposed to know. You're supposed to know, but I don't know. Let's find the answer. So that's very powerful. Mm-hmm. Now, here's something I want to surprise you with and ask you toward the end of this. We're going to role play. And you know I love to role play, especially when I surprise people. But you are responsible for training the new hire leader. And that new hire leader is me. And my question to you is, Mr. Henry, what are the three things I really need to do to be a good leader? What are those three things, and why are those so important?
The three things that you need to do is be open, willing to accept criticism, and trust in the system and the process. And the reason I say those three is because willing to learn things. One thing I've learned in management is that things change so quickly sometimes. You have to be able to swallow it and then digest it back out to your staff to where then they understand it and they trust it. Being open to change makes a big difference in your role as a leader, because your staff change constantly. They're going through things emotionally, physically, that's work-related. Some of it's home-related. You have to be able to balance that. And then just being able to trust that what you're putting in place, it may not seem like it's going to change overnight, but trusting that what you've invested your time in, it would then soon perish from there.
Okay, so I get those three things, Mr. Henry, but I'm just a little bit concerned about building the trust on my team. do those three things, you think if I just do those three things, that builds the trust, people start to trust me? After all, I'm new to the company, people don't know me. Will those three things work, you think, just to build trust, or do you have another thought?
Well, for trust, I think those three play a key part in it, but also with trust, just being open. Be open enough to tell your staff, you know, you're new. The expectation is that you're learning the process and buy in on them helping you get to that process because they're your team. And in order for your team to trust you, they have to be able to know that you're taking their input on whatever is being discussed. Of course, you let them know it's input. I may not take everything, but I am hearing what you're saying.
Ah, okay. So in other words, just take that input, but let them know I'm listening. I may not be able to do everything, but I'm listening to do that. Okay. I like that. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So I only asked you for three things and I had another question for you. Is there anything else you want to add on to a new leader like me that maybe I should really pay attention to?
As a new leader, just being compassionate. If it's something that you're doing and you love what you're doing, being compassionate about it shows to your staff and your staff then feel that they have the right person in position because no job is perfect. There's going to be some kinks and tweaks that you're going to have to alter, but with your team supporting you and backing you, it makes it much easier and smoother to get through the day.
Perfect. Perfect. Raphael, I appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts with us. I'm sure every leader out there will be able to take this and pull several nuggets of wisdom from it. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing also to bet that a lot of folks will go ahead and take this and share it with their team members to say, "No, listen to this podcast. Here's a gentleman who's in a leader, as a manager, and he's not." In other words, I would like to use it to say, "You're not listening to me. Listen to this one." I think it's very good. So I appreciate you taking the time. I know that I know what you're doing, and I know you don't have a whole lot of time for it. So I appreciate you taking every ounce of every second that you have had to get this in place for us.
Yes, and I appreciate you having me and your time as well.
Fantastic. All right.